I did, after all, set about the task of preaching about joy for myself this morning, so there should be some sort of funness happening somehow, not just some preacher perorating profundities. My minister, who is the supervisor for my internship in Bedford, Massachusetts, gosh, I loved him. He is the Reverend John Gibbons. And one of the things that I loved about him was that he was just so playful. No gimmick was too corny for him to bring into a service. While I was there, he actually officially purchased, so it belonged to the congregation, the disco ball that he hung in the sanctuary there, which, gosh, that made the services kind of nice, especially during the winter months there. Very twinkly. I remember him coming over to me one day and saying, oh, look at this, have you seen this? And I said, yeah, you got to order it then. And so he ordered it. And so that Christmas, in addition to the disco ball going around and shining all the little sparklies around the room, we had an inflatable flying clownfish that we piloted around the sanctuary. Yeah. I need more headroom here. This is why we need a new building. It's for inflatable flying clownfish, or the other thing that John Gibbons was well known for. He had a well-established penchant by the time I arrived there for streamer and confetti cannons. One of the first lessons I had at his hands was how to properly load, aim, and fire the streamer cannon, so that the two of us then at the end of the water communion service there, one of my first services with that congregation, we were out on the lawn on the town green and fired our streamers up in the air, and they all got caught in the trees. Yeah. There were streamers every water communion in September. There were streamers after the Christmas Eve services inside. In fact, when the couple who were the lead plaintiffs in the successful case for same-sex marriage in Massachusetts, Hillary and Julie Goodridge, when they got married at UUA headquarters in Boston, and they walked out onto the steps, the photo that was snapped by the AP photographer features streamers by the Reverend John Gibbons. Simply fun and joyful, and you might imagine that when I left the congregation, one of his parting gifts to me was, in fact, but we need a bigger ceiling. I can't do that in here. I'm too nervous to set that off in this room. So I've used it in my time with you, but only in times when I've been away in other places. So I have this little fun device that I haven't been able to play with you all. And gosh, you know, I've been just chomping at the bit. 10 years, people. Come on, let's get a new building in here. I do have that little bubble machine thing, right? Yeah, it's like I've got, it's all right. That's all right. I've been meditating on the theme of renewal this month. When I try to understand how renewal might happen, the first thing I thought of was experiences of joy and playfulness, like I've been reflecting on today. Experiences of joy feel like renewal to me. So call to mind for yourself a time when you experienced joy. Think about where you were, who was with you. What I've been thinking about lately is May 25th, 10 years ago, which was the day this congregation voted to call me as minister. And gosh, you couldn't scrape me off the ceiling when that happened. Yeah. Ah, you people. So what is joy like for you? The poet Ross Gay has found acclaim by writing about joy and delight. And often when he gives a reading, someone will ask him a question that goes something like, What with all of the awful, terrible, horrible things happening in the world, the important, really important things that are happening in the world, those difficult, troubling things that we need to think about and address, how can you write about joy and delight? Gay points out that what this question implies is that joy doesn't have anything to do with any terrible stuff at all. Or it may also even imply that joy is the opposite of that. Which I guess is a reasonable notion, says Gay, given how joy is often imagined to be the result of organizing our closets and bookshelves, or getting the new Tesla, or winning the big game, or acing the test, or getting a promotion, or getting our dishes sparkling clean. Joy, the thinking goes, is that room at the top of a flight of stairs that, upon entering, washes you with clean air and glad music and comfy furniture and gentle warmth emanating from the white pine floors, suffused with light pouring in from the enormous windows with a sweet window seat where you can sit and read a happy book. The joy room, the thinking goes, is snug with every good and nice and cozy thing. Neither Gay nor I believe that's really how joy works. For example, there are at least two important and joyful celebrations going on this month, this week, in fact, in this town. June is Pride Month, after all, and next Sunday, the Saratoga Pride Festival will take place at High Rock Park from 2 to 5, and we UU Saratogians will be there peopling our table, and there will be rainbows and laughter and even joy under those pavilions. And there will be more joy this Wednesday when Juneteenth, now a national holiday, will be celebrated. UU Saratoga is one of the sponsors of this year's local Juneteenth celebration, which, along with many, many other organizations, it happens this Wednesday from noon to 5 at the Saratoga Regional YMCA. There'll be a program of speakers, musicians, poets, dancers, players, running from 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock. And that program will include UU Saratoga member Dan Berggren. And you will see joy that day, that Wednesday. Joy celebrating Pride, joy celebrating Juneteenth. These are joyful events, and their joy is not simple or easy or unconnected with terrible things. That joy is connected to suffering and hurt, which the Pride Month and Juneteenth celebrations and holidays also hold. Ross Gay says, "It's a kid's fantasy, by which we grown-ups seem as seduced as plenty of kids, to imagine any emotion discrete from any other. But it strikes me as a particularly dangerous fantasy," continues Gay, "by which I also mean it is sad, so sad, that because we often think of joy as meaning without pain or without sorrow, not only is it sometimes considered unserious or frivolous to talk about joy, but there's so much pain in the world. But this definition also suggests that someone might be able to live without, or maybe a more accurate phrase is free of, heartbreak or sorrow, which I'm pretty sure you can only get to do if you have no relationships, love nothing, are a sociopath. And I don't know about you, but I check none of those boxes. We all know sorrow. We all know sorrows. And we all know joy and fun and laughter, and I don't know how possible it is to disentangle or separate them." I read something that gave me some joy this week. It's a piece that was published in 1922, and it might be the first time in print that the word gay was used to describe a same-sex relationship. It's a piece called Miss Fur and Miss Skeen, and it's written by Gertrude Stein. And here's a little taste of it. Here we go. Should I out myself as somebody who's enjoyed modernism? I'm sorry about that. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. Go with this. Helen Fur had quite a pleasant voice, a voice quite worth cultivating. She worked to cultivate her voice. She did not find it gay living in the same place where she had always been living. She went to a place where some were cultivating something. Voices and other things needing cultivating. She met Georgine Skeen there, who was cultivating her voice, which some thought was quite a pleasant one. Helen Fur and Georgine Skeen lived together then. They were together then and traveled to another place and stayed there and were gay there. They were quite regularly gay there. Helen Fur and Georgine Skeen, they were regularly gay there where they were gay. They were very regularly gay. To be regularly gay was to do every day the gay thing that they did every day. To be regularly gay was to end every day at the same time after they had been regularly gay. They were regularly gay. They were gay every day. They ended every day the same way at the same time, and they had been every day regularly gay. I can't, it just makes me grin. I guess it makes me gay, right? It makes me gay where here we are together cultivating something, right? Here we are together, gathered together, intentionally cultivating something, voices and other things that need cultivating. We are very regularly practicing the cultivation of, say, compassion and being gay, which means being joyful, which means being gay, which comes to mean being gay, right, because of cultural misogyny and patriarchy, which can't help but show disrespect for the showy or the effeminate, but gay still ends up being regularly gay, cultivating being joyful. I don't think I would feel what I feel about that piece about Helen and Georgine, Helen Fur and Georgine Skeen being regularly gay, very regularly gay, if it wasn't hard or even dangerous to be gay regularly in our country. But out of that hurt and out of the community holding that hurt together and healing together, helping one another through the hurt to wholeness, out of that suffering, you won't find anything more joyful than a pride parade or a pride festival at High Rock Park. And though the Juneteenth celebration may come close to that in joy, well, it will for sure be joyful too. It's also a joy that comes out of suffering and a sharing of suffering and a being with one another through suffering. Ross Gay wonders, but what happens if joy is not separate from pain? What if joy and pain are fundamentally tangled up with one another? Or even more to the point, what if joy is not only entangled with pain or suffering or sorrow, but is also what emerges from how we care for each other through those things? What if joy, instead of refuge or relief from heartbreak, is what effloresces from us as we help each other carry our heartbreaks? What if the renewal we need is a renewal of joy that welcomes suffering, that grows from suffering, a renewal that emerges with joy from the caring we show and share for one another and for accompanying one another through pain, suffering, or sorrow? Could we practice such a renewal regularly? Could we cultivate our voices to speak of sorrows held in common, to sing of a gaiety, a joyfulness that emerges from noticing what we love in common? Ross Gay says, "My hunch is that joy is an ember for or precursor to wild and unpredictable and transgressive and unboundaried solidarity, and that that solidarity might incite further joy, which might incite further solidarity." And on and on. My hunch is that joy, emerging from our common sorrow, which does not necessarily mean we have the same sorrows, but that we in common sorrow, joy might draw us together. It might depolarize us even and de-atomize us enough that we can consider what in common we love. And though attending to what we hate in common is too often all the rage, and it happens also to be very big business, noticing what we love in common and studying that might help us survive. It's why I think of joy, which gets us to love, as being a practice of survival. Joy as a practice of survival. May we be here in community together to cultivate other voices and other things that need cultivating. May we open to our sorrow and to how we have in common with one another that we sorrow and we suffer. May we be drawn together. May we survive and thrive in common, noticing what we love in common together. May we be regularly gay every day, doing the gay thing to do every day, regularly practicing care every day, that we will be seen, that we will have been to be seen, will be, are, regularly, every day, joyful, every day, regularly, gay. Amen.